on today's episode.
And unlike many other sins, sexual sin is not something that you can really treat as separate from who you are. It changes you when you do this thing. It's the nature of the act as well as its spiritual significance. I always think of, I don't know if this is a correct interpretation or whatever, but it's always where my mind goes. In Psalm 51, David's great psalm of confession after his horrible spate of sin, starting with Bathsheba, he says, "My sin is always before me." And for me, that just kind of pictures this idea that this is something he can't escape. Even if he wants to, it's just always right there.
Welcome to the Life Challenges podcast from Christian Life Resources. People today face many opportunities and struggles when it comes to issues of life and death, marriage and family, health and science. We're here to bring a fresh biblical perspective to these issues and more. Join us now for Life Challenges.
Hi, and welcome back. I'm Krista Potretz, and I'm here today with Pastors Bob Fleischman and Jeff Samuelson. And today we're going to talk about sex outside of marriage. Recently, we've done some episodes on marriage, on finding a mate, on just different things, and we've talked maybe a little bit about this topic, but we really wanted to dive into this topic today because it really seems like one that is very relevant and has been for a while in our culture, too. Maybe a few generations ago in our society, and maybe in most societies, really, it was generally understood that sex outside of marriage was against the rules, so to speak, or that it was maybe even just morally wrong, or, okay, you know, those people do it, but maybe not someone of good standing in society or that type of thing. That has changed. I think maybe that is the place to start too, is just exploring this idea of maybe how that it's changed and what the current landscape is in our culture today.
I guess with a pastoral background, I'll start by saying that big change is the decline of not just of Christianity, but of religion, and the decline not just of religion, but of religiosity. You know, we used to be able to take it for granted that even if many people around us didn't follow the sixth commandment when it came to marriage and sexuality, or they weren't moral in terms of these things, that they at least understood that they were breaking the rules, that they were doing something that shouldn't be done, even if they decided they were going to do it. Maybe they'd say, "Oh, I don't feel guilty about it," but they still recognized there was a standard that they were breaking. And now, find this even among many Christians, it's as though they are not even aware that sexual relations are supposed to be reserved only, exclusively for heterosexual marriage. It is it's happened rather quickly in terms of historical span of things. But I guess also mention that related to that, and this is more on the philosophical end, is just the elevation of the subjective and relative over the objective and authoritative, more feelings over reason, desires before duties. And it's basically what's best for me is what's best, period. And so there's not thinking of the other, and there's not thinking so much of, well, how does this affect the entire society? How does this fit in with a good life for the culture?
And when Jeff says it's happening, it's happened quickly, it really has. And because we used to, the way it used to be is like you said, generations ago, it was just kind of understood, you know. And then there was this attitude like, well, before marriage, playing the field a little bit, that kind of thing, but certainly not within marriage. But even today now, there's this whole movement now where open marriage, where couples are, there's a commitment between the two of them, but when it comes to their sex life, they can go outside of marriage. So you're getting a lot of that blurring going on as it keeps infiltrating in, which I think it's going to be one of the points that I want everybody to keep in mind, and that is nothing starts off as a bold, in-your-face violation of the clear teaching of Scripture. It usually starts subtly, small, kind of creeps in, and then it begins to start manifesting itself in bigger and bigger ways.
Yeah. One big sociological change that people point to is the advent of easy and effective birth control. That once the connection between pregnancy and sex was severed, there was no longer the price, the consequence to free sexual activity disappeared. And so that freed people up. Hugh Hefner, founder of Playboy, apparently was very in favor of birth control because it freed men up to do things that previously women wouldn't have been so keen on. But another sociological change that people don't often think about that apparently was also very involved in this was actually the advent of the automobile, at least in American society, because prior to that, there were very few opportunities for a young man and a young woman to spend time alone together without any supervision. But once the car was available, that opportunity was there in a way that it wasn't. And some sociologists have apparently looked at the statistics on that, and they've seen a correlation between the advent of cars, lots of people having them, and level of unintended pregnancies and things like that.
Yeah, you know, thinking too just about how our culture has changed with this topic too. I mean, especially I would say it's really reached the point where even Christians now are just kind of saying, well, what's the big deal with sex outside of marriage? I mean, really, why does it really matter? And there are a lot of arguments that that they use or that we do here nowadays too to kind of justify these choices or justify the culture today and where it's gone. And so we do want to go through some of these. We thought it would be helpful to talk about some of them. I kind of want to start with maybe what I think is the biggest argument, and that is, everyone else is doing it. And, you know, I mean, maybe not the most scientific argument, but one that I think we just hear all the time.
I guess my first response to that would be something along the lines of, your mother never accepted that kind of argument from you. Why do you think that it works with something as significant as sex? I mean, if you told your mom, oh, everybody's going down to the river to play, and your mom said, well, I don't care if everybody is. It's you're not allowed to do that. That's wrong. And yet people grown ups, you know, or they're feeling grown up, they think, well, everybody else is doing this, so it must be okay. That's really not a standard that anybody really should be accepting. But of course it's a very comfortable one.
One of the things interesting about the statement itself is one, it's factually not true. I mean, because everyone else isn't doing it. In fact, interestingly enough, there's been some studies that have almost, in a laughable way, has raised concerns because of the proliferation of pornography and so forth. Now, all of a sudden, they're concerned that there's not sexual activity occurring. You know, there's masturbation going on. There's people avoiding relations. And now they're becoming concerned about, even with marriages and so forth, that there's going to be negative population growth, which of course is being predicted, all those kinds of things. So, but the bottom line is that when you understand the biblical teaching that the every inclination of man's heart is evil, if you understand that, I think you should automatically be alarmed if everybody is doing it. Because if everybody's doing it, an inclination of man's heart is evil, maybe it should throw up a flag for you that I don't want to do that. Part of it, too, is the people who make the arguments are the people who want to do it. Like, for example, let's pull it out of the area of sex for a moment. I've made it no secret, at least to you guys, I'm losing weight. I got to lose weight. I got, you know, I've wanted to lose weight for years. And Oprah Winfrey, you know, left Weight Watchers. And part of her argument is we now know that it's a physical problem. It's not just habit. It's a physical problem. And of course, people like me are going, well, then I can be fat. You know, it'll be all right to be fat. And but the reality is it's usually a combination of both. It's habit and biology. There's something that happens to us when we get the idea that everyone's doing it. Of course, and where do you really get this idea? You don't get it as much from your friends as you might think. You get it a lot from television and from movies. It is amazing how everything works with the presumption that, you know, we're going to try before we buy. We're going to, you know, be sexually involved. We're going to find out where I'm good and where I'm not good. And that's all out there, and it's presented to you in that way. And so you begin to start buying into it. And right now, Jonathan Haidt, Haidt, just came out with a book about the influence of social media on adolescence. And I just started reading it, but already, you know, he's starting to score on the fact that you get saturated with this constantly around you, that everybody's doing it, that you actually begin to believe it. Doesn't have anything to do with the morality of it, if it's right or wrong. If everyone's doing it, the reality is, if everybody's doing it, be wary of it.
I was just going to say, you know, one last thing you could say to a Christian is, but you're supposed to be better than that. You know, that's what we're called to be as Christians. You know, we're not called to be what everyone else is doing. We're called to be different.
Right. Just this made me also just think too, and I was definitely thinking along the lines how you were too, Bob, about just how we get this from movies and culture and that type of thing. It was a couple years ago, I was watching a documentary with my mom, and it was actually on women in Hollywood, and they were complaining that, you know, back when they were little girls, that they're just the way women and girls were portrayed in movies was just so terrible, and how there just weren't enough girls maybe like as lead characters in movies, and how, you know, the boys got the better parts and the girls were always looked at as weak and just that type of thing. And my mom said to me, she's like, oh, you know, did you feel that way watching movies growing up as a kid? And I said, no, I never felt like that I wasn't represented as a woman in movies. But I said, I felt all the time that I was not represented as a Christian woman, like adequately in movies, you know, because anytime there was a teenage girl or a preteen girl who was a Christian in a movie, she was always very unrelatable. Nobody really liked her, you know, if she was saving herself for marriage or just that type of thing. I mean, that character was always ridiculed in movies. And I remember like thinking, boy, I mean, I don't really feel represented in mainstream media here, you know, growing up as a kid. And so I mean, maybe there isn't this idea, maybe everybody's doing it is wrong, but sometimes, I mean, when you're portrayed certain ways or you see things in media, I mean, it can make you feel like, oh, well, am I doing everything right? Or I don't know, you do start to kind of question some of your values mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
Well, you know, another argument that we have here, we'll just keep going down the list. Sometimes people will say, well, you know, we're two consenting adults and no one else is affected by our relationship. So what does it really matter?
Mm-hmm. Again, what about God? You know, he's certainly a part of this. He knows, he sees, and he certainly is affected because he's offended by what you do. Again, somebody who doesn't believe in God or doesn't care, okay, that's not going to be much of an argument. But to someone who claims to be a Christian, what God thinks of what you're doing should be the most important consideration. And so, yeah, you can't just say, well, no one else is affected. And then it is going to affect other people. Yeah. At the moment, yes, maybe it is just the two of you, but it's going to affect your other relationships. I mean, if you choose to do this thing with this person, well, that means there are other people, other relationships that you are not having, that you are not investing in the same way. It's going to affect possible future relationships, and it's especially going to affect your future marriage. I had a college friend who told me before she was married, but she was talking with a friend of hers and just saying about, well, yeah, she was, you know, I'm still a virgin. And her friend said to her, oh, that is such a good thing for you. That's such a blessing, because that means that when you get married, there's never going to be anybody else in your bedroom. You're not going to be comparing your husband to anybody else. You're not going to be remembering your previous experiences. It's just going to be you and him. And that always stuck with me as just a wonderful reminder there that God's way actually is the best way. It's a blessing when you follow his will.
It's a naive statement. Sure, two consenting adults, so that makes it maybe 50% correct. How do you say it doesn't affect other people? Again, you know, and I've said it before, that a lot of times you get people who have like a thimbleful depth of understanding of philosophy, psychology, and so forth. If you think there is nothing wrong with lying on your taxes, and that's just one person, I can lie on my taxes. And if I do it well enough, no one will ever know. Do you think that that doesn't have any effect on the other parts of your life? When you think that something's all right to do that's immoral, that's not going to somehow show up in one way or another elsewhere, you're just naive. You have no concept of how psychology works. You have no concept of how people are. I mean, anybody who even remotely, you know, watches you, studies you, comes to know you, you know, how many times hasn't your mother come to you and said, something's wrong? I just know something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to say no, but yeah, you know, the answer is yes. You know, something is wrong. I mean, people know you. People watch you. They do it. You know, people have said to me, you know, well, yeah, you know, in our marriage, you know, we only fight in the bedroom. We only have the kids aren't aware of it. They aren't aware of the problems. Kids know. They pick up on it all the time, and they catch on it in body language and everything. If you know anything about child psychology and how formative those early years of children are, they pick those things up. They pick up attitudes. They pick up priorities when you're screaming and yelling. They pick all that up. So you think that you and another person, because the two of you agree on some immoral act, whether it's sex outside of marriage, whether it's lying, whether it's deception, something like that, you think that that doesn't affect other people. You're going to have to surround yourself only with people who think like you, so that you can reinforce that idea. Because in reality, it does affect other people. It always does. It always does.
Another one here is, no sin is any worse than any other, right? So what makes this one so different than, say, breaking the speed limit or losing your temper or anything else?
As the guy who just got pulled over for driving too fast on the way to the grocery store, I can, and I got a warning, and I deserved it. Sometimes we forget, why do I lead a chaste life? Why do I obey the speed limit? Why do I not lose my temper? Why is it because God will like me better and maybe save me then? You know, none of that is the motivation for doing it. I think, you know, if somebody were to say, if you could only pick on one thing that you think is a problem with today's society in our country, and that is we've lost the ability to show gratitude. My first clue was, you have an event, you send out an RSVP, please RSVP, and nobody responds. And some show up and some don't. You don't know how to plan. Why? Because, you know, they've lost some of that. Well, when it comes to gratitude, saying thank you and so forth, a Christian's life, you know, I was just studying this part the other day where it says, this is love for God to obey his commands. And my commands are not burdensome. And I'm thinking, no, wait a minute. Yes, they are. They are burdensome if I think I have to perform. I have to perform in order to be saved. They're greatly burdensome because, like the Apostle Paul, the good that I would do, that I do not, the evil I would not do, that I keep on doing. But when obeying God's command, obeying the sixth commandment, obeying the fifth commandment, honoring my parents, when doing those things are a way to tell God, I genuinely appreciate everything you've ever done for me in my life, not the least of which is the sacrifice you made on Good Friday. That all of a sudden, it's not burdensome, because if it's not a burden for me to say thank you, then these are the things God says, these please me. And that becomes the motivation. So you are correct. Is sexual sin any worse than any other sin? Okay, well, anybody who wants to play that game is kind of being a little bit silly, because really, it's not about performance. It's about appreciation.
that kind of argument also ignores the fact that, and this is just something we know from observation, there are certain sins that have what we might call more gravity than others, in that they attract other sins to them. It's like the thing that you do wrong that then you have to tell a lie about, and you have to tell another lie to cover that up, and then you're hiding this, and da-da-da. And unlike many other sins, sexual sin is not something that you can really treat as separate from who you are. It changes you when you do this thing. It's the nature of the act as well as its spiritual significance. I always think of, I don't know if this is a correct interpretation or whatever, but it's always where my mind goes. In Psalm 51, David's great psalm of confession after his horrible spate of sin, starting with Bathsheba, he says, "My sin is always before me." And for me, that just kind of pictures this idea that this is something he can't escape. Even if he wants to, it's just always right there. But I think, you know, again, going back to the beginning, to Genesis, when God instituted marriage, it said, "For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and will remain united with his wife, and they will become one flesh." Now, if that were the only reference to this one flesh union, you might be able to say, well, that's just kind of metaphorical, or it's just kind of a physical description, but there's not really much meaning to it. But Paul refers to it later in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Well, he's talking about how people there at the church have been kind of liberal, licentious in terms of sexual activity outside of marriage, and, you know, even like visiting prostitutes. And he said, "Do you not know that he who is joined to a prostitute is one body with her? For it says the two will become one flesh." So he's referring back to this act of union as something that is deep, something that is real. And he's saying that when you do that outside of marriage, you're tearing at an important truth that belongs only in marriage. And so this is something deep. It is something significant, and it's on a different level, not because it's a sin that is more offensive to God than others, but because it has more consequences.
You know, another argument that I hear too is just this idea of, we have to see, like, if we're compatible in all areas, and just before we get married or engaged or anything, just another step in taking our relationship to the next level and building on that intimacy and everything. What would we kind of say in response to that as Christians too?
Might be drifted into PG-13 here, but the sexual compatibility is a relatively easy compatibility to have. The compatibility that is central in my relationship with Diane is way, 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 way past sexual. And that's a compatibility that didn't require a sexual relationship. It's a compatibility of interest, of values, of a shared commitment, of faith, because the time comes in a relationship where the sexual component of it, which was wonderful, which was great, and all that kind of stuff, becomes way down the line. It becomes the hand-holding, the talking, the tears, the hugging. It translates into that. And I think we have to remember that a lot of what we have, and we talked about this on a previous episode, a lot of what we talk about in terms of relationship and marriage is an American invention. Yeah, before, you know, sometimes your spouses were picked for you. That's kind of how it worked. So we've got to get to the point of recognizing that what we're doing is we're looking for excuses for sex. You know, so I want to see if we're compatible. Oh, shoot. Well, on to the next one. You know, that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, and that was going to basically be my point, that, you know, this objection, it's begging the question logically, because it's presuming the very thing that it's asking about. It's presuming that there are some people who are more or less compatible with you, which means basically there's this menu out there that you need to sample. But if it's a one-to-one exclusive relationship, there is no question of compatibility. If after you're married, this area of your relationship becomes problematic, okay, you can work on that to make the two of you match up better there with your desires and interests and responses and all those sorts of things. But to presume that we should be having more of this, that, you know, and that if this one doesn't work out, there's a better one out there, is presuming the very thing that you're pretending to argue for.
No, I think that's true. And, you know, I think to another area, maybe, you know, that just like with the young men, is this idea, well, you know, I need to sow my wild oats or get some experience in that area too. What would we kind of say to that as Christians?
I could never sell my mom on that one when it came to punching my brother or something.
Yeah.
Well, he's just sowing his wild oats. You know, just again, you know, she stopped that activity because it wasn't right.
There's even a certain kind of irony connected to this. You know, for a very long time, it was somewhat accepted in our culture that men should come to marriage with sexual experience. Man should know what he's doing on the wedding night, but women, no, they shouldn't. The math on that was always off. How can you have the one without the other? But with the rise of feminism, you know, that inequality was challenged. And unfortunately, instead of concluding that neither men nor women should have that experience before marriage, they argued that women should be just as promiscuous as men. And that, of course, took things very much the wrong direction. But, you know, to this whole matter of got these urges, got these needs, got these interests, God has provided a very good response to that. Paul in 1 Corinthians 7 says, "I say to the unmarried and to widows that it is good for them if they remain as I am," which was unmarried, "but if they do not have self-control, they should marry, because it is better to marry than to burn with desire." Yeah, so there is a provision for those wild oats. It's find yourself a wife or find yourself a husband. And maybe that will mean you're not going to be as picky or particular as you would because you realize, well, I've got this other urge that's driving me now. Well, maybe, but this is something to control and it is not something to give into.
I had seen just a YouTube video type of thing too with a conservative girl talking to somebody who was like that, a man who just, yeah, felt like, you know, he just kind of needed to do all this but he was very successful in business and you could tell he really worked out. And she just kind of said, like, "You're so disciplined in all of these areas. Why can't you take that same level of discipline into relationships?" And that he just said, "No, I mean, absolutely not. He couldn't do that." But it was kind of just along the lines of what you were saying there too. You know, I think we've talked too about just how really the design to save sex for marriage is God's way of preserving us too. And I know, like, you know, we can probably point to some Bible stories where sex outside of marriage got some people in trouble too. What are some of those stories where it did show that it was a big deal to do that?
Well, when I was thinking about this, I found one really good one on the positive side, mm-hmm. and a lot more on the negative, which I suppose is illustrative of the situation. I guess we can start at the beginning. Already in Genesis, we've got Sodom and Gomorrah and the disordered sexuality that is there, and then Lot's daughters, which follows on that pretty quickly. We've got the story of Dinah and Shechem. Which follows that, one of the less known ones, even less well known, is the story of Reuben and Bilhah. Reuben's the eldest, and it says he went up to his father's bed, I think they described it. Basically, he slept with one of his father's concubines. And then we've got also the story of Judah and Tamar, who was kind of his daughter-in-law, but he didn't realize it. He thought she was just a prostitute when he visited her. And
so that made it okay.
Yeah. just all those kinds of things. And I guess one of the more famous stories that even is known outside of Christianity sometimes is the story of Samson and Delilah. It's often forgotten that they weren't married. And this was Samson, you know, sowing his wild oats, so to speak. And boy, did it get him in trouble.
And of course, David. Mm-hmm. King David and Bathsheba. Mm-hmm. Part of this thing is, I wrote a pamphlet early on when I came to CLR in 88, 89. One of those years, I wrote this pamphlet for our affiliates, and it was called "Sex is Like Popcorn." Talk about how it's addictive. You know, it's like, can't just grab a few, and pretty soon you want more, and you want more, and you want more. And part of it has to do with the sex drive and things like that. The Bible, where they were talking about King David and so forth, that there usually is some disaster down the road that comes with it. And that's valuable to remember. But I think it's also valuable to remember that you're dealing with a force that oftentimes takes control of you, I mean, to some degree. Those who have robust sex lives, hopefully within marriage, know the deep attraction you have for your spouse. And that attraction exceeds intellectual. It even exceeds emotion. It becomes a little bit of a drive. And you start pandering that outside of that circle. It's a cause for trouble. And if you don't think it's a cause for trouble, if you think it's something you can well manage, try stopping. Yeah, you'll find that when you try to, when I have counseled people who have been very promiscuous in their lifestyles, and you try to get them to stop. I remember one fellow used to tell me every time he got this urge, call me. He was driving me crazy. He was calling all the time, but the point is that it's, God has given you a drive that he uses to draw you close together with the one flesh concept. He also uses it for proliferation, for populating the world. And you got to remember that that's that kind of a drive that pulls you. And so once you step into that arena of being outside of marriage, becoming sexually involved, just if you think that this is just an old fuddy-duddy conversation about keep sex and marriage, then just prove me wrong and try to stop. Try to stop. And you're going to find that there's a control in here that's a little bit more powerful than just your intellectual might to be able to say, I'm stopping.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in the 80s, there was a really popular song by the Pointer Sisters, which fortunately I was sensitive enough at the time to be able to say, yeah, this has things wrong. I can't remember what the exact title of it was, but it was a very hard driving, kind of exciting song. Definitely something you could take out on the dance floor or whatever, but I'm so excited. I'm about to lose control and I think I like it. And that's precisely what you were talking about. It's losing control and giving into it and saying, well, this is fun. So yeah, let's. And that's, again, the opposite of what we're talking about. But, there is one story that I think is particularly helpful for, this idea of the objections and everything and Christians, adopting some of these ideas. In 1 Corinthians 5, in that letter, Paul's been addressing all these problems that have been reported to him about the church in Corinth. And he gets to this matter of this something that's been reported among you that not even the Gentiles would put up with. And it's like, a man has his father's wife. And they were apparently treating this as something kind of to be proud of. Like, look at this freedom we have in Christ. We can even do this thing that nobody else would consider as normal or right. And he's just saying, this should not just embarrass you. This should be something horrible to you. And you need to convince this man of his sin, but he's not just saying this man is the sinner. You are sinning by permitting it, by having this attitude where you're going to allow it because, well, it seems like there's freedom to do things that there wasn't before. And he's correcting that in a very strong, strong way. And, I think there's a lesson for us in that too, in that, it's so easy to just say, well, we're free in Christ to do all these things. So I guess it must be okay for us to do this because everyone else in society is doing it. And it doesn't seem, from my perspective, it doesn't seem to have any negative effects. So it must be great. It must be okay. And we as the church, as pastors, as parents, as friends, we need to have the courage to say, as Paul says, no, this is wrong. This is something you need to repent of. And you need, if you've been doing it, you need to stop doing it.
Which probably brings us back to the sad reality in that some people listening to this are like dating and one party wants to go to the next step, wants to become sexually active. And there's this tension going on. What do you do? How do you do it? And of course, when you get older and you look back in life, there's a certain phrases that you hear when you're younger that you wish people would quit telling you because it doesn't matter. And yet when you're older, you look back and go, but that's absolutely right. And that is people who feel pressured to become sexually involved because everyone's doing it. There's no consequences, all those kinds of illusions that you have. And then somebody who, a Christian, a fellow Christian who's going to try to talk some sense into you will say, then maybe he's not the right one, or maybe she's not the right one, or maybe this will be your first test to find out how this relationship will go. Just remember this, that doing God's will never carries with it an eternal negative consequence. Doing God's will is always the right thing. It's hardly ever the easy thing, but it's always the right thing. And I think it's valuable to remember that sometime when you get to the point where you have to put your foot down, that it's going to maybe hurt. Doing what's right can be challenging. And you got to trust, you know, that God will work all that out for your good. And sometimes your good is protecting you for eternity. Sometimes your good is because Miss Right or Mr. Right is down the road a little bit.
Well, we're going to end it there today. Thank you both for this discussion. And we thank all of our listeners, too, for joining us today. And if you have any questions on this topic or any others, please reach out to us, lifechallenges.us. You can find us. And we always welcome comments and feedback. All right. We'll see you back next time. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Life Challenges Podcast from Christian Life Resources. Please consider subscribing to this podcast, giving us a review wherever you access it, and sharing it with friends. We're sure you have questions on today's topic or other life issues. Our goal is to help you through these tough topics, and we want you to know we're here to help. You can submit your questions as well as comments or suggestions for future episodes at lifechallenges.us or email us at podcast@christianliferesources.com. In addition to the podcasts, we include other valuable information at lifechallenges.us, so be sure to check it out. For more about our parent organization, please visit christianliferesources.com. May God give you wisdom, love, strength, and peace in Christ for every life challenge.